The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 907. It's the 27th of October 2017. On the podcast today, I have from Vast Resources, that's VAST, CEO Roy Pitchford, and President and Executive Director of Romania, Andrew Pelea, and they talk about today's news regarding their letter to shareholders and give a general update on progress at the company. Also on the podcast, I have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covering GSK, Barclays, and BT. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now from Vast Resources, ticker there is VAST, is CEO Roy Pitchford and Andrew Pelea, President and Executive Director of Romania. Guys, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks for having us.
Now, you've got a bit of news out, a convening of a general meeting for shareholders, and we'll get the detail on that in a bit and ask a couple of questions around that. But before we do, guys, as always, Roy, could you give us a brief summary as to what Vast is all about, please?
Certainly. Vast has converted from being a junior exploration company into a junior mining company, and we currently have an operating gold mine in Zimbabwe called Pixton Peerless. And we have an operating polymetallic mine in Romania called Maniela. In Zimbabwe, we are looking at developing our second mine called Giant, and we have started the evaluation work on that project a few weeks ago. And in Romania, the next project, the Baita Ply mine, is about to be started. It's the reopening of an existing mine. The license is due imminently, and we're gearing up to reopen the Baita Ply polymetallic mine. So we hope to, in the near future, have two operating gold mines in Zimbabwe and two operating polymetallic mines in Romania, plus some very exciting exploration and prospecting ground in Romania.
Okay, excellent stuff. All right, about the general meeting. So you're inviting shareholders to vote in another meeting. Can you explain the reason behind this, please, Roy?
Certainly. What we had at the annual general meeting last Friday, a number of resolutions that shareholders voted on, and in particular, the resolutions regarding headroom and disapplication of preemption rights, a number of representation letters, etc., came in that were incorrectly completed, and we were not able to use those votes. And looking at it, it was possible that by excluding these votes, we could have altered the outcome of the meeting. So rather than take that risk of getting a result that didn't reflect what the shareholders wanted, we decided to postpone the voting on the headroom and the disapplication of preemption rights to a general meeting, which is going to be Friday week, so that we can ensure that all the proxies and the representation letters are received correctly.
Understood. So Andrew, can you explain a little bit about the funding requirements and where these funds will be directed to in the next 12 months?
Most certainly, Justin. During the first application for headroom, it was a relatively significant amount of headroom required. Since the movement in the share price, and the real reason for us actually asking for the headroom is only as a stopgap measure for the company. So we've actually reduced the amount of headroom required, or let's say asked for more so, because we're in the process now of talking to off-takers and other financial institutions for long-term funding and expansion of the remaining assets. So the short-term funding, we're looking at more of a bridge loan equity or a bridge equity to be raised, is specifically for assisting us in finalising these offtake agreements. And the reason for that is we've been, on a small market as a small market cap company with fairly limited resources. And on the back of the results of the last quarter and the history of the growth in Romania especially, as well as Zimbabwe, we're now talking to quite a few potential debt funders and off-takers for finance. And this is basically a stopgap measure to ensure that we can provide the supply of material to repay any debt coming forward. And in the past, what generally happens is, you know, when you raise equity as a junior miner, you're not at risk in any way, shape or form. When you start to go into the debt markets, you need to be secure in the fact that you can repay that debt and service that debt. So this small amount of equity raising is purely to assist us for a little bit of working capital, not much, as a stopgap measure until everything comes online, but more so to prepare us and to make sure that we are able to fulfill our obligations under those long-term debt contracts, as well as a little bit of a portion of this money will go towards the startup of Baita as well.
Understood. And you've been talking to some big names. Can you elaborate on this a little?
Unfortunately, I can't give any names out at the moment, but they are quite sizable. We've been contacted by many off-takers, especially over the course of the last 8 weeks, especially since the last September quarter. But what we are looking at purely is, metal traders and off-take agreements with finance debt attached to it, and some vendor finance and bank debt as well. But it's, there's significant amounts of money. And once they go through the final due diligence stage, they will take us forward into the future, not only for our current cash requirements, but also for the future debt arrangements for opening of other mines and continuing on the exploration targets that we're currently looking at here in Romania and potentially in Zimbabwe as well.
Okay. So, looking down the timeline here now, both in Zimbabwe and Romania, what can we expect in the next 6, 12 months and a bit further down the line? So let's go with Roy with Zimbabwe, please, Roy.
Now, Justin, what we have in Zimbabwe is the expansion to the Pixton Peerless gold mine, the new sulfide processing facilities that have been installed and are now being commissioned and brought up to full speed. So we will be increasing our monthly milling tonnage from 20,000 tons to around about 35,000 tons. And we'll be increasing the feed grade from around 2.5 grams to somewhere between 3 and 4 grams. So we should see a significant improvement in the amount of gold produced at Pixton. The cost per ounce is going to remain more or less the same, probably slightly lower. So the margin per ounce on more ounces is going to produce the additional cash. Secondly, we will be reporting on the developments at the Giant Mine and how things are going there. And hopefully, as the market knows, we constantly have our ears to the ground looking for other opportunities in Zimbabwe. And hopefully we'll have some success on that front as well.
Excellent. Andrew, in Romania?
Romania, the next 6 months, I think, will be the turning point for Romania, especially with the debt finance available to us. But more importantly, within the next 6 months, we plan to be operational in Baita with a ramp up to the 12 months to full operations. In Manaila, we intend on continuing the steady state production, increasing quality, commencing the pre-stripping at an accelerated rate to ensure that we don't have any stoppages during the winter months as we had last year. We've made a lot of precautions, but we want to start stockpiling at a greater rate. And then, of course, the extension in Cali Baba, the second round of drilling results, which are being finalised now, and releasing the JORC for Cali Baba, and hopefully starting on that project as well, with the extension of Manaila and bringing down the cost of production by 25%. So the next 6 to 18 months, we believe, are the most exciting times in the evolution of VAST.
Excellent stuff. Well, listen, if someone's listening right now and they're not following you, and yet you say it's the most exciting time in your period there, could you give them three reasons, Roy, why someone listening right now, are liking the sound of this going forward, why they should hit that follow button on your page if they're not already following you?
Certainly. First point is that VAST is operating in two unique jurisdictions, Zimbabwe and Romania. There are not a lot of mining companies focusing on these two areas at the moment. And so we almost have the playing field to ourselves. That provides us with lots of blue sky opportunities. So we're unique in where we are operating. Secondly, because of the lack of competition, etc., in both jurisdictions, it is possible to pick up mineral rights at a discount, particularly Zimbabwe. There's a massive discount applied to any assets that one acquires in Zimbabwe. And the reasons are well known, the current economic situation, etc. And when that comes right, as it certainly will do, these assets will re-rate in value, or there will be further, in both countries, add significant value to assets that we acquire now when conditions in the countries improve. So bargain hunting at the moment, particularly in Zimbabwe. And really the third reason is the share price. The share price does not reflect the value potential of the assets that we have. We've already increased the net present value of our operations quite significantly. That's independently determined by commentators on the company. And the upgrade or the assets is not yet reflected in our share price. But in time, the market will begin to understand and accept the value that has been created, but more importantly, the value that can be created in the very near future. And we think that as the market begins to appreciate these facts, the share price will reflect that sentiment, and obviously the market cap of the company will go up. So because of where we're operating, because we can get assets cheaply, and because there's going to be the recognition of what we've achieved and can achieve, I think this is a good reason why people should follow this company and, if they're inclined, invest in it.
Excellent. Thank you, Roy. Thank you, Andrew. And like you say, it's a busy, exciting time for the company, so no doubt we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Justin. Ciao.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Hello, Justin. Yes, I'm fine. Good, thank you.
Now, you are my eyes on the larger market cap space there, and obviously you come on to cover some releases. I did catch Barclays release today and also yesterday. I was looking at BT because they were down, and I looked at the wider sort of FTSE 100 index, and a lot of big fallers yesterday, including GSK, which I've got on a watch list, and I've got a price alert on, and it alerted that price alert. So did you catch up what was happening at GSK?
Yeah. Let's start with Glaxo. Yeah. Obviously the numbers came out yesterday, but they came out at an unusual time. They came out about midday UK time because the company has a big US shareholder base. It's a big global company, mm-hmm. and they release it so that US and UK investors can have a look at the numbers and then ultimately listen to the conference call at the same time. So that came out at lunchtime, and the results were a complete shocker. In terms of the share price reaction, the shares were down 5% odd, and when I looked this morning, they were slightly down again, heading towards that sub £14 level, which has been a big old support. 13 odd quid is a big old support for the stock. What do they say? If you pace through the numbers, there wasn't anything dramatic. The dividend is not under pressure. They're saying all the right things in terms of growth, of terms of opportunity in their pipeline. There wasn't anything obviously bad. What I think it is that we've obviously had a newish CEO there. She took over just over about a year ago, and there were lots of hopes that Glaxo was actually going to be broken up. That it's got lots of different parts. It's got the pharmaceutical part, it's got the consumer part, it's got a vaccines business, etc. It's actually quite split upable. But the reality is, she said, no, we're actually going to do the opposite. We're going to acquire businesses to make our company even stronger. And there's a lot of chat at the moment that they might be buying a big consumer business from Pfizer. Mm-hmm. So lots of sort of products that you can pick up in Boots and places like that. And I think the combination of the fact that the numbers were okay but not stunning, and the fact that they said overtly that we're going to spend money in order to improve and augment our business further, just led to people losing confidence with the stock. My view would be, look, consumer has been an exciting place to be for the pharmaceutical companies, you know, rather than grapple with regulators trying to get new drug products being bought by National Health Services and the like, sell it to us consumers. And obviously aging populations and all that sort of stuff is kind of a positive underlying thematic for it. But the bottom line is they're paying a big old price for these consumer businesses. They're going for massive multiples at the moment. And I think that's worrying a few people. And really glad that there's chat about, is the dividend under pressure, can they afford it, etc. Maybe that's a bit overdone, but my view would be, you know, it's interesting. Glaxo shares got hit on the thought that they may be spending money and moving ever further away from splitting the company up. My personal view would be, as we get back towards the sub £14 level, Glaxo is starting to look interesting. I don't hold the stock, but the fact is it's got a 5 and change yield, and actually it's getting closer to these bigger support levels. You go back to the chart to 2015, early 2016, there was big support in the 13 quid and change level for Glaxo shares. I think it's looking interesting, and I think as people bail out or kind of look elsewhere, just maybe this one's starting to come onto the watch list.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's on my watch list. I saw the big fall yesterday, and like I said, I did have a sort of a price alert on 14.50, and it's sort of it, because that was a previous support level a couple of times, but it broke through that, and so now I've lowered it a bit because it may see a couple of days of weakness. I also noticed she did she said something about there's concerns over Brexit as well. So they're spending money, or looks like they're spending money, and she said she's worried about concerns over Brexit. So I think it wrong-footed a lot of people, didn't it? I think.
Yeah, no. It look like it's a very international business, and you know they actually make more money in dollars, much more money in dollars than they do in pounds. So, you know, Brexit is a distraction, I think, for many businesses, Glaxo included. But is it an absolute shocker for them? It per se, no. Actually, they make a lot of dollar revenue. So, if the pound fell off a cliff, as it did, obviously, in the immediate aftermath of the referendum, actually, that would be good news for Glaxo from a reporting perspective. So, it's a complex one. I think. Though, look, healthcare, we know there's competition. They're paying up for these consumer businesses, and that's what worries people, particularly if it limits the ability of Glaxo to expand the dividend, which is why many investors hold the stock. Ultimately, it's a good underlying theme, broadly a sensible company, some okay products, and for me, is now falling out of favour that it comes onto my watch list. I'm not buying it yet, but my feeling is a print starting with a 13 is starting to look much more interesting.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, and let's get the Barclays in there released today. What's happening there?
So it's
down a bit.
Yeah, Barclays shares down 5% odd when I last looked this morning. So two or three things to think about there. I mean, all the banks are kind of struggling with, or have struggled with, things like regulation and costs. And, you know, that still rumbles on. But they're coming out of that. And you saw that with the Lloyds numbers earlier this week, too. Look, Barclays is simplifying. And the numbers are messy today because they're sort of selling out of their Africa business and related. And that's made the numbers very complex. They've given a few targets for where they want to go in the future, which looks okay. But they've also said that the markets business, the sort of the trading business, the investment banking business, has been a bit tough. And many banks have said that, the big American banks as well. But the retail banking business, the corporate banking business, the Barclaycard business have all done all right. So it's a bit of a two-way pull on the operational numbers. I think really people, maybe they're expecting more. I have to say, looking through, Barclays is trading well below book value. And in terms of the targets they've laid out for the next couple of years, I have to say, if they get anywhere close to those, the shares look cheap. Of course, banks have their own issues around them. They are linked to the economy and everything else. But I have to say, gut feel, Barclays shares look cheap here. By choice, I'd be a buyer here at the margin.
Yeah, cool. Marvelous Dust, 183. Down, what are they doing? I don't look at the moment, down just over 6.6%. Yeah, so. All right.
You know,
and I don't know if you're on the fly here, Chris, but I just saw a release as we're coming on there about Ofcom and BT have done a deal about landlines. Let me just find that. It was a landline deal. Well, apparently they'll be cutting £7 off landlines for about a million customers. Which are, and you've got to think, I know they've had issues, and the share price is historically low at the moment, and it's looking at the charts, is you know really oversold on the relative strength index on every metric, from weekly, daily, hourly, really looking super oversold. And you suggest when if you look back, every time it's been at this level before, it has bounced. But you think, how much bad news is going to be priced in here? Because they are having, like say, regulator issues. And is this problem at the moment? They're arguing with Ofcom about, I think it's rural broadband. They want to finance it themselves or something. And the other competitors are saying, no, we want part of the financing of it. And BT wants to push that financing on to the other wholesale people. But I don't know, it's a mess, isn't it, with Ofcom. And I think that's preying on the actual share price a bit. But they've taken a hammering. You know?
Yeah, that's right. And obviously they had the whole open reach issues where there was lots of chat about whether they were going to have to be split out of BT and become an actual proper separate company. And ultimately BT and the regulator sort of reached a deal there.
Yeah.
Look, I think BT, for me, this Ofcom landline thing is a bit of a sideshow. At the margin, interesting to talk about and think about the implications, probably more important for the average listeners at the margin phone bill. In terms of the share price, though, I think it's pretty negligible effect. What's hit BT shares over the last few weeks and months has been a couple of things. Number one is, obviously, they had a complete shocker in places like Italy, a fraud there, which is very embarrassing. There's obviously some fears about how the integration of the mobile phone acquisition EE is going. Obviously, that's a big opportunity as well, and it seems to make a bit of sense to combine fixed line, broadband, mobile, pay TV, and related. But you know, BT has spent a lot of money on EE, on pay TV, BT Sport, and all of that, and people are wondering, well, are they going to get the returns from it? I think there's a couple of other issues related to that. People are worried about the dividend. So a bit like Glaxo, whenever sort of dividend fears crop up, people get concerned and sometimes the share sells off because lots of people are owning it for the dividend. And I think for me, is that a big concern? It's something to be looking at, but I think BT will be okay for the time being. And then, of course, there's the pension deficit, which has been deepened by the very low bond yields. BT have got a new chairman coming in. He's the guy who helped stabilise and ultimately turn around Rio Tinto. And I think it's a good hire, because I think what BT needs is a bit of leadership. And it needs to be able to say, look, this is where we're going to go and this is what we're going to do. And for me, the opportunity with BT is merging the EE business, getting pay TV to work in that sort of overall offering. So we as consumers get that one bill which covers a variety of things, you know, the classic quad play kind of offer. So for me, BT is actually looking quite interesting here. It's way out of favour. I think there's too much pessimism about it. And you're right. Things like this Ofcom announcement at the margin, you know, people look at it and think, oh, you know, yet another thing to be worried about. Why the hell should I own the shares? Mm-hmm. So there you go. As always, with markets and sentiment, pessimism often peaks at the lower the share price. And that's just maybe what we're seeing from BT. What we do need to see, and it is upcoming, is another set of numbers. Because as always, the thing that allows a company to move on is to them to come out and say, right, here's where we are in terms of profits and cash flow and our targets, and then crack on. So that's, I think, what people should wait for on BT. By choice, I would agree. I think it's a buy, or at least a hold if you've got it already here. I wouldn't be panicking out of it.
Yeah, it's one of the things, isn't it? It is like the, you know, the contrary investor, and that's why they do well. When it's playing into this concern and fears, like the amount of times I've heard sort of analysts say, oh, the dividend is a threat, and that's been completely unfounded with companies. Unbelievable, you know? I've heard it so many times about Royal Dutch Shell, like you say, other companies there, and now they're doing it with BT, and it does scare people when they say, oh, this starts selling. But like I said, sometimes the best time to buy, if you've done your research, is when all this fear is around, because when they release figures, and it isn't as bad, like with Next a while back, you know, it really jumps quite aggressively when it's this oversold, you know.
Precisely, that's right. And this is the psychology of the stock market. It's difficult, it's tough, it's not easy, and you're dealing with fear and greed in the short term, and fundamentals and numbers and cash flows and everything in the longer term. And that tension between the two is all critical. So for me, you know, when you find an extreme situation where there's too much pessimism or too much fear, and yet a business is all right, or the complete opposite, of course, where there's euphoria about a stock, but actually the numbers and the fundamentals and everything don't really justify it. Mm-hmm. That's where you ultimately should be looking to either obviously buy in the former case and lighten up in the latter case, or sell out in completely. That's what the market's all about. It's not easy. If it was easy, we'd all be on the beach counting our massive pile of pounds, dollars, or whatever else, bitcoins or something. But, yeah, but there you go.
Exactly. Marvellous, Chris. Good to speak to you. And we'll speak next week, fella.
Cheers. Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, New Oil and Gas. That's NUOG. And of course, I talked to Simon yesterday, the new IR and communications officer or director. At four, Harvest Minerals, HMI. At three, Vast Resources. Check the Roy and Andrew on the podcast earlier. At two, Herencia Resources. Herencia Resources. I don't know how you produce it. But ticker there is her. Yeah. And at number one, it's been there all week, I think, for the last five, for days in a trot at least, I think. It's Greatland Gold. GGP. All right. Top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 3 hours were... from Jubilee Platinum, JLP at 5, quarterly operations update. At 4, Greatland Gold, TR1 notification of major holdings. At 3, Flying Brands, FBDU, update on business operations. At 2, Challenger Acquisitions, CHAL, company update. And number 1, most liked, RNS, was from Sirius Minerals. Are you serious? Yes, I am. Ticker there was SXX, Poly4 offtake agreement in Southeast Asia. That's it for the podcast. Thank you for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.